from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A recent study out of Northwestern University affirms the long-held notion that exercise improves sleeping patterns, but also finds that for insomniacs, it takes 4 months of exercise for sleep improvements to actually kick in. We're going to speak with the lead author of the study about the latest research on exercise and insomnia, and let me introduce her. Her name is Kelly Glazer-Barron. She's assistant professor of neurology and director of the Behavioral Sleep Medicine Program at Northwestern, and we welcome you, Kelly Glazer-Barron. Good morning. And she is also lead author on this study. And with us in studio is Dr. Rafael Paleo, back with us on Forum, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Stanford University Medical Center, and glad to have you aboard as well.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Kelly Glazer-Barron, let me begin with you, and let me just say that this research appears in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine, the August 2013 issue. Exercise improves sleep, but gradually among older adults with insomnia. That's kind of the bottom line. But also, sleep is more of an influence on exercise than exercise is on sleep.
Right. So this was an opportunity to analyze some data from a trial conducted in an NIH-funded trial a couple years ago. And it really tested a clinical observation of mine that my patients were coming in saying, "Doctor, you told me to exercise, and I just don't feel any better yet." And so we were able to look every single day for 16 weeks in these participants and look on days they exercised, did they sleep better that night? Or if they slept better, did they exercise more the next day? And these, I find – oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say these are mostly women you were working with. Yeah.
This was women in this trial. There was 11 women enrolled in the exercise portion, and there were seven women and one man in the control group. But this was only analysis of the exercise subjects.
And we're talking about aerobic exercise largely?
Yes, this was aerobic exercise. It was American Heart Association recommendation, so it was moderate exercise. We had them start with an exercise trainer to ramp up their exercise because they were all sedentary at the beginning of the study, and they had heart rate monitors in the beginning, and then from there they just did their own thing, whether it was mostly treadmill walking or elliptical trainer, stationary bike.
So the bottom line is it takes as long as maybe about 4 months for patients who have insomnia to benefit from regular daily exercise.
Yes, this has been shown in several studies that the exercise benefits really take between 8 and 16 weeks for insomnia, but they're large. And so I think the finding is really quite encouraging, and the effect size was as large as medications for sleep or cognitive behavioral therapy. And so these women were sleeping 45 minutes more per night at the end of the study. I mean, that is huge.
And in fact, Rafael Paleo, it's huge in the sense of it's more than they get out of cognitive therapy. It's more than they get out of drugs, isn't it?
It is, actually. Medications only help you sleep maybe 15 to 20 minutes more than you would compared to placebo. So it is a big effect.
And what else does this tell us about our sleep habits? I mean, for example, it tells us something about neurological differences with insomniacs, doesn't it? Or it confirms that? Yeah, think about hyperarousal of the stress system and all those sorts of things. I mean,
right. And one of the things that they found in the study was not so much that the exercise was improving sleep, but the way you slept the night beforehand improved the way you slept also. So on the days that they slept better, the following day they did more exercise. So that was one of the other effects of it, that it actually goes in both directions. It's not just a one-directional thing. A lot of people predict how much exercise they'll do based on how well they sleep the night beforehand.
And this would be true as much for women as it would for men? There's no real gender distinctions to be made here?
Insomnia is more common in women, almost 2-to-1. This study was only in women, but at this point I think we could probably generalize this. Something similar would occur in men also, I would think.
And you were saying, I believe, Kelly Glazer-Barron, that in order to sleep better, maybe people just ought to, as far as doing exercise, put a note on the mirror that says, just do it. Have you found efficacy for that?
I mean, I could only use myself as an example. And I can't make the decision in the morning whether or not to exercise. You just have to get out of bed and start it, because I pretty much will never feel like exercising in the morning until I get going. And I tell my patients to do the same thing. They can't decide when they wake up. They have to start the day with the intention to exercise.
And let's talk about other things that can help people fall asleep, Rafael Paleo. Warm bath, for example.
Warm baths are an excellent option. Part of the thing to think a little bit about this that they got into the study too is the time of the exercise. Exercise in the morning or the afternoon may be different than exercise after dinner. They may have a different role of it. And it may be related to the same reason warm baths affect our sleep. We sleep better when our bodies are cooling down. You sleep better on a cool night than on a hot night. And what happens is when you take a warm bath, the body heats up, And then when you get out of the bathtub, the body cools down quickly. And that drop in heart and body temperature, that drop in body temperature helps us fall asleep. Remember, people will fall asleep before they freeze to death. So the hot bath is not the warmth that's making you sleep. It's the change in temperature when you get out of the tub. We think it's helping you sleep better.
And you get kind of hot and bothered from exercise, though. I would think that could inhibit sleep.
That's why we think that exercise, and it would be nice to hear the author's opinion, but exercise after dinner in the evening can have mixed results. And some people sleep worse if they have exercise in the evening. Plus, exercise also is alerting in of itself. So the general recommendation is exercise either in the morning or the afternoon. Certainly before dinner seems to be the best way to improve sleep, is my understanding.
So, Kelly Glaser-Barron, nocturnal exercise is not what you would recommend here?
Right. I think the ideal time to exercise is 4 to 8 hours before bed. But it depends what your goal is. For someone who doesn't have sleep problems, for most people, I say exercise when you can, is the bottom line, because most people need to get more exercise into their day. For people who have sleep problems, exercising too close to sleep could interfere with sleep, although there's been two recent studies that had young, healthy people exercise very vigorously right before bed, and their sleep was unchanged. And so that, I think a rule of thumb exercise before bed might not impact everyone. And perhaps we just don't understand the differences of who's more susceptible to sleep interfering or helping with exercise.
Haven't we also learned, and haven't you confirmed, that older adults do a lot better sleeping when they walk generally?
Absolutely.
Any time of day, really, yeah.
The effect size for exercise and sleep, meaning the effect of how much exercise will improve sleep in older adults, is probably stronger than that in younger adults, because older adults just have more room for improvement. And so even lower intensity interventions like walking have been shown to affect older adult sleep. And we even did a previous study with Dr. Z in our lab from a few years ago that they did very low intensity exercise, like just moving around the arms and doing mental activities and games, and those sort of things also improve sleep.
And Dr. Pelayo, I don't want to necessarily encourage anybody to do more imbibing than they already perhaps are availing themselves of, but a little schnapps helps too, doesn't it?
I say people can drink with breakfast, but not after dinner. I think alcohol after dinner definitely can make your sleep worse, because alcohol is a very short duration of action. It wears off in about an hour. So you may fall asleep faster with alcohol, but you'll wake up more often. Your sleep quality will be worse. Nobody says they got a good night's sleep after a night of heavy drinking. So alcohol, even in moderation after dinner, can actually interfere with your sleep, precisely because you fall asleep faster, but you tend to wake up more often.
A recent study out of Northwestern affirming the long-held notion that exercise improves sleeping patterns, but finding that for insomniacs it takes about 4 months of exercise for sleep improvements to actually kick in. We're talking to a lead author of the study about the latest research on exercise and insomnia, and also with Dr. Rafael Pelayo. And you can join us. In fact, we invite you to do that if you have questions or comments and would like to be part of this conversation. You can join us now at our toll-free number. That's 866-733-6786. So feel free to join the program. Again, toll-free number available to you, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or simply go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can tweet us as well. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But if you have questions or comments or would like to join the conversation, particularly for some of you who are insomniacs and may have some thoughts about what has worked for you or what hasn't worked for you, and I can certainly speak about insomniac friends and family members who have gone through, to hell and back, one might say, just trying to get to break those kind of patterns. Exercise, sleep, nutrition, they all kind of go together, don't they, Rafael Pelayo?
We think of it as the triumvirate of health, Dr. Dement says. All three things, exercise, nutrition, and sleep. And sleep being the cornerstone, because if you sleep better, then everything else will fall into place.
And there's still this ongoing research down at the Stanford Sleep Center, I know, and this controversy about how much sleep is enough. Different people have different metabolism. I know people who sleep 2-3 hours a night and believe it or not, live very productive and full lives. I know people who need 9-10 hours of sleep a night.
I think it's a mistake to think about hours of sleep. It's quality of sleep. So I remember seeing a 3-year-old who told me that sleeping made him tired. And his mother said he sleeps more than the other kids. He had big tonsils and he had poor quality sleep. The more he slept, the worse he felt, because he had sleep apnea. So don't think about the hours of sleep. The real question is, do you wake up feeling refreshed? If you don't wake up refreshed, something is wrong. You should never, ever wake up tired. That's the key. You don't leave restaurants feeling hungry. You should not wake up feeling tired. If you wake up feeling refreshed, there's no issue, no matter how many hours of sleep you're getting. But if you wake up tired, something's wrong.
Dr. Pleo and I, Dr. Glaser Barron, have talked before about naps. How do they figure into your paradigm or into your picture? Kelly Glaser Barron.
For most of my patients, I actually recommend avoiding naps because they're coming to me because they're having trouble sleeping at night. And I really refer to taking a nap is like having a snack before dinner, and it really takes away their sleep drive at night. Now, on the other hand, I have worked with people who are heavy exercisers, like endurance athletes, and possibly because of their need for energy conservation or something like that, they do take a nap. Or also naps can be quite helpful for people who don't get enough sleep for whether it's their work schedule or their child care obligations. So it's not an absolute no. Most people, I say, avoid napping.
Let me go back to your study for a moment. It seems to me that your study opens up, a whole host of opportunities, really, where insomniacs are concerned, for new studies to show the effect of exercise on sleep, improving sleep, not only for insomniacs, but for healthy sleepers.
There's a huge amount of opportunity for sleep and exercise research. We don't know about the dose, about the frequency, about age and gender differences, and also different types of exercise. This study only looked at aerobic exercise, but doing yoga or doing other resistance training also has shown promise.
And those, I kind of alluded to this before, but those who have sleep disturbances often are, in fact, in many cases, neurologically different.
It's quite possible. There's been some fMRI research showing that there's differences in the brains of people with insomnia, showing that basically regions that are at night, regions that are awake that should be asleep, and during the day there's regions that are asleep that should be awake. And it's this over-arousal at night that is preventing them from falling to deep sleep.
Well, what about the people, Dr. Pleo, who work the graveyard shift or have to kind of shift the diurnal and the nocturnal and transfer them? It always presents problems, doesn't it?
Sure. And Kelly alluded to this a little bit as far as napping goes, that in general it's correct to avoid them. However, shift work is a classic example where napping may be a very good thing to do. And the FAA, for example, once put in napping guidelines for pilots on long flights. And you want people who are doing shift work to be well-rested and not make mistakes. So there are different ways of changing this, and there are people who do consulting just on how to arrange shifts. But in general, you always want to, if you're going to be changing shifts, change shifts where you are advancing, starting earlier than expected, because it's easier to force somebody to wake up than to force somebody to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. You never want to take a shift where they're forcing you to fall asleep earlier than usual, because the brain has a biological clock that may give you a second wind and stop you from falling asleep. So you always want to be careful with how they rotate the shifts. It's always easier to head west than to head east, for example, right? Because when you're heading west, you're prolonging the day. That's easier to adapt to. If you're going east, you're shortening the day. You have to fall asleep earlier, and that's harder to do.
So Horace Greeley was right. Go west. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Kelly Glaser Barron is, we've talked about this before on this program with Dr. Pleo and others, but he was talking about what's important being how refreshed you feel as opposed to the number of hours. And this gets into the whole notion of REM movements, doesn't it? You can measure how well a person or how deep a person is sleeping. Do insomniacs generally not sleep as well? Do they have different problems with REM movements?
Well, in this study, we looked at the duration of sleep. We looked at the number of awakenings, the stages of sleep. We don't have all of that data analyzed right now, and we haven't presented it. But one of the things that we're interested in with sleep and exercise is how many minutes of deep sleep or slow wave sleep. And that's really the kind of sleep that you feel refreshed from. And as people get older, they get less and less less and less slow wave sleep. And one of the things we were hoping to see with this study is that exercise would improve slow wave sleep for older people who are getting less of that anyway. And that's really our hope.
And I've got a listener, James, who wants to know, is there a difference between daily exercise and every other day?
That's a good question. I don't think we know that in this study. They did 3 to 4 times of exercise per week. And so in this study, they were doing every other day. I mean, we would assume that when people overtrain, it's been shown that they have worse sleep after that. So if somebody is doing daily exercise and going over what their limit would be, which we're not sure yet, that could lead to worse sleep.
And let's nail this down, because we're getting questions that seem to suggest perhaps some lack of clarity about sleep and how it affects exercise.
So this is the first study to show that sleep affected exercise. And we found a small effect in that if they slept more minutes per night, if they slept another half hour, let's say, at night, the next day they exercised a few minutes more. And that was a small effect, but these were in people who were enrolled in the study to exercise, and they were having to write down their minutes, and they were checking in with us weekly about how much they were exercising. So we might say that effect may be bigger in somebody who would be free to skip that workout or weren't so accountable for that workout.
And Rafael Paleo, Karen asks, and you've read the study, why does it take 4 months to help insomnia? I mean, a lot of people would think exercise might, you know, work right away, but the study shows it takes that long.
First of all, you should keep in mind that the study only included 11 women, and we have to be very grateful to get any patients to volunteer for any kind of research. And any listeners out there is thinking about doing research, you're helping society when you do this. It's really hard to get the funding, but once you get the funding for the research, getting the volunteers is a big deal. So in these 11 women, it took 4 months. Obviously, there may be different effects on this. However, it's also, more importantly, these were insomniacs. Insomnia, even though they're neurological changes, is still a learned behavior. There's nothing permanently wrong with their brains, we don't think. They can't be changed. But it may take about 2 months, usually, to get an improvement in somebody's behavior from just learning how to sleep better. So 4 months is not such a long period of time. Insomniacs have insomnia on average 10 to 15 years before they seek medical attention. So if you tell somebody who's been sleeping poorly for 10 to 15 years, give me 4 months of time and you'll get better, they'll be very grateful.
Well, I think we have an insomniac on the line here. Dorothy, join us. Hi.
Hi. I'm 62 years old. I exercise 3 to 4 times a week, not heavy aerobics, but Pilates and yoga classes and core classes. And I eat 3 times a day. I take my class like around 6 o'clock at night, come home, eat dinner. I'm up doing things in the kitchen, watching TV. I don't go to bed till 12. I get up around 7. It doesn't matter. I go to bed at 10:30, 12, 12:30. I don't fall asleep till about 1 o'clock. I rarely get more than 6 hours of sleep, except on the weekends if I take a sleeping pill or something. I can sleep 8 hours. But I know this isn't enough sleep for me because in the afternoon, sometimes I can barely keep my eyes open. I sit at a computer all day.
Some advice for her, Rafael Paleo?
Well, if you don't fall asleep till 1 o'clock, why bother going to bed at 10:30 would be the obvious thing to think about.
Yeah.
it's always easier to push away sleep than to advance sleep. All humans, all of us, get a second wind at night. So for about 2 hours before usual falling asleep time, we tend to be maximally awake. It's a big mistake to go to bed earlier thinking you're going to get more sleep. It's actually the other way around. Lock in that wake-up time, especially on weekends. You said you get up at 7 o'clock on workdays. On weekends, keep that 7 o'clock wake-up time locked in. And then maybe push your bedtime to maybe closer to 12:45. And you will gradually improve the quality of your sleep.
And again, thank you, Dorothy. Good luck to you. Again, Rafael Paleo is Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Stanford University Medical Center. Marta writes, I've been an insomniac all my life, even in the college years when I rode a bike 10 to 20 miles per day. Then I worked nights for the next 12 years while I was raising my kids. I can honestly say that I did not sleep at all for 20 years, and I did not start sleeping well until late in life when I made enough money to eat. But I can say in all honesty that I have never, ever slept for more than 4 hours straight, even as a child, because my mother had 6 kids after me. There was always a baby and a toddler or two in my room. Sort of, again, different strokes for different folks or something along
wow.
them. Yeah.
There's over 100 different sleep disorders, and there's like at least 40 different variations of insomnia by itself. So this is only one type of insomnia in this study in elderly women or middle-aged women, rather. But he is a very different character, right? He had insomnia as a little kid. There are some people who are just wired differently from birth. He probably had a whole lot of other issues going on. But most insomniacs will get better when addressed correctly.
And we bring on a caller from San Jose. Dilip, good morning.
Yeah, hi. My name is Dilip Dahanda from San Jose. I have a habit that I would like your guest to comment on and also a question. I'm a tennis addict, so I play rigorous tennis from 8 to 10, and then I'm kind of an alcoholic too. Then I drink from 10 to 12, mostly red wine, and I eat at 1. I do sleep for about 7 hours. I wake up at 8:30. But during those 7 hours or so, I do dream a lot. I mean, even if I sleep for like 10 minutes, I can start dreaming. So my question is dreaming good or is it bad for sleeping? And I guess I cannot control it. And then I'd just like a comment on my habits.
Yeah, Dr. Glaser-Barron.
The interesting thing about alcohol and dreaming is that alcohol suppresses REM or dreaming sleep in the beginning of the night, and then it comes back and rebounds in the second half of the night. And so the alcohol may actually be causing a difference in your dreams. But I do tell my patients that whether or not you remember your dreams or not, most patients have REM sleep. And so I tell them not to worry about whether or not you remember your dreams or not, because it's really not indicative of whether or not it's a good sleep or not. Now, for your habits, I think you have a good idea about what's going on, that you know, you've got some late exercise, you have some alcohol that might be going into your sleep. What I tell a lot of my patients to do is to do a sleep log where they write down their bedtime, their wake-up time, their sleep duration for about 2 weeks, and try an experiment and try to reduce or stop drinking for a period of time and just look at the difference in how you feel. And then that will kind of give you the answer about whether or not your alcohol is affecting your sleep.
We'll go to Dr. Paleo.
And one more thing to keep in mind is that exactly what Kelly was saying, it's not the dreaming is the issue. It's being aware of your dreaming. Most of us do not remember our dreams that much. So if you're aware of your dream, something is interrupting or fragmenting your sleep. And it could be the alcohol, but also very commonly, especially in our younger athletic people, is mild sleep apnea. Mild sleep apnea often begins with a lot of dreaming reports by our patients because the sleep is getting choppy as they're trying to breathe at night. So they become more aware of their dreams. So it's not the issue that you're dreaming. It's that you're aware of your dreaming that's of clinical concern.
And I thank the caller and go to some more of your emails. Aaron writes, my mom has been an insomniac for years but doesn't recognize she has a problem. It has presented a multitude of problems, including weight gain, stress, and general irritability. How do you recommend we as a family get her to shift her behavior? She's terrified of therapists and of seeking any help. Let me go to the therapist here. Kelly,
I'm sorry. We're both therapists, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the main thing is, you know, what I ask my patients when they come in, because oftentimes they're coming in because they're referred here and not because they're coming in on their own accord, is to ask them, you know, what do they hope to get out of their sleep, and are they willing to give it 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks to work on that sleep, or in the case of exercise, more like 16 weeks. But, you know, they've had insomnia for 10, 20 years. Is it worth giving it a concerted effort for a certain period of time? And you know, how would their life be different? Would it improve it? Is it worth the experiment, the shot? And I really try to encourage them to be a co-experimenter with me, and we'll look at the changes and look at the progress together.
Rafael Paleo.
A lot of insomniacs blame themselves for their insomnia. They said, if only I was different, I would not have this problem. And they kind of beat themselves up over it, or they resign to the fact that they're stuck being this way. Other family members were this way, or they assume they're going to be told what they're going to do. Most insomniacs have memorized all the sleep hygiene rules, for example. They recite them back and forth, but it doesn't work for them. Like telling somebody who's overweight to eat less. That's not a sufficient approach. It is very important to people understand that even if you've had longstanding insomnia, the vast majority of insomniacs will get better in about 2 months when approached with the current scientific methods. With or without medication, that's not the issue, but most people will get better. For this particular case, for the mom, obviously things to check would be her thyroid, for example. She's overweight. There are a lot of things we have to check into, but most insomniacs will get better.
Well, as long as we're talking about family, Kelly Glazer-Barron, my sister was an insomniac for many years, and then she went on medication, and now she's sleeping fine. I mean, you know, a lot of people just don't want to go on medication, but your research showed that if you do exercise in this four-month period, at least for the women that you work with in the experiment, you can simply get more sleep than you can by medication even.
Absolutely. There is no one-size-fits-all treatment for insomnia. The NIH consensus was that cognitive behavioral therapy is a recommendation for long-term treatment of chronic insomnia. And the problem with the medications is that they stop working when you stop taking them. And also the FDA has come out with saying the doses for medications like Zolpidem, otherwise known as Ambien, suggesting a lower dose for women, for example, and more stringent testing for next-day effects.
And so Ambien can make you do very strange things. I mean,
there are some case histories of people, stories
that make you, you know, raise your hair on your arms if you have. A listener writes, Kelly Glazer-Barron, any sleep advice for someone who recently increased the intensity and frequency of their workouts? Will more sleep help my performance?
That's a good question. Well, sleep doesn't change someone's aerobic capacity, but it changes someone's perception of how hard that workout is. Exercise may change someone's sleep need. So vigorous exercise does increase total sleep time, and perhaps the body needs more time sleeping to repair and restore from that vigorous exercise. And so perhaps increasing their time in bed by another half hour or so, going to bed a little bit earlier or giving another half hour snooze time in the morning may help with exercise performance.
And here is Sharon. Good morning, Sharon.
Hi. I wear a Java Apps Fitness and Sleep Tracker, and I would be more than happy to have my data as part of the anonymous, you know, collected data pool for research. I'm wondering if anybody has thought about collaborating between industry and academic research with something like Fitbit or Jawbone or Nike Fuel Band, those sorts of things.
Well, if you're looking for volunteers, Rafael Pelio, it makes sense to collaborate with industry, doesn't it?
Yes, actually. You know, some industries don't want to know about the sleep problems that there are among their employees. For example, the trucking industry sometimes doesn't want people to know how many of their truckers have sleep apnea. Because then if they find the problem, then what are you doing about it? Mm-hmm. So it is a complicated issue because of liability problems. But yes, of course, you want to partner with industry.
Here's a listener who writes, I was just about to quit smoking again. In the past, I have had bad insomnia in the first month or so absent of nicotine. Exercise will be a regular part of my program. Any further advice?
To be congratulated for trying to quit smoking is the first thing. Definitely, any kind of withdrawal of any substance, including nicotine, is going to be associated with insomnia. Nicotine receptors are actually involved in dreaming. So it wouldn't be surprising that any kind of cigarette cessation would be involved, would interrupt your sleep. It's only a matter of time. You've got to give it maybe, get past those first maybe 2 months or so, and then it'll start clicking and you feel better about it.
Another listener wants to know if using medical marijuana for insomnia makes sense.
That's something we just don't know that much about, really.
Yeah, the data is kind of not great on it. People always talk about it, but in theory, it should actually make it worse for some people.
Well, any other advice for insomniacs before we wrap this up, Kelly Glazer-Barron?
I would say, you know, based on these findings, exercise is a reasonable treatment for insomnia, but don't expect a quick fix. I really give it 4 weeks or 4 months until you really can say whether it helps your sleep, and keep a sleep diary or wear some sort of device like a Fitbit or a Jawbone or something like that to track how your sleep changes.
Any other thing to add there, that,
I think especially here in the Bay Area, we actually have excellent sleep medicine available in the Bay Area. So if anybody is having trouble with their sleep, insist on seeing a board-certified sleep expert.
And you can read the research that Kelly Glazer-Barron is lead author on in the August 15th Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine. Thank you, Kelly Glazer-Barron. She's assistant professor of neurology and directs the sleep behavior medicine program at Northwestern at the Feinberg School of Medicine. And Dr. Rafael Pelio, associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford Medical Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, our listeners. And thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, to our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Katie Sprenger. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.